Right, have we got a microphone? Oh, that sounds like a microphone. Fantastic. Guys, just before I get started, probably quite a fair few of you here. I just want to give you a little bit of a positioning on this talk and the following talk. So this talk is, you know, all about Team Foundation Server Express, or TFS Express. It really should have been listed more as a level 200 session. If you've been using TFS for a year or more, if you're pretty confident with TFS, it's probably not the best session for you to be in. If there is anything else you want to see and you've been using TFS, it's, you know, by all means jump out now while you can get into those other sessions. I'm not trying to get rid of you, just trying to respect, you know, your time. Good job, thanks. I can read my evals now. He tried to get us out. Fantastic. So, just to be very clear, so it is really we're going to install TFS Express from scratch, get started, and do an overview of what TFS is. That's what this one's all about. The next session is closer to a higher 300. So we have a look at process template customization, XML configuration files, and we get into the meat of TFS. So I don't know that came across overly well in your conference guides or on the schedule builder. So. And it seems like it was a very, very timely suggestion. Because I'm thinking there's way too many people here I know have played with TFS. I think a few more things and I'll be able to just sit here and drink coffee. All right, we'll just give them a moment or two. Okay, these latecomers are thinking, what has he said already? How did he offend so many people? It was really easy. All right. So, welcome along to All Aboard the Team Foundation Server Express. My name's Anthony Boughton. It does move. That's fantastic. That's a little bit about me. I'm a Microsoft Visual Studio ALM MVP. By the numbers there, I did my first Microsoft exam back in 93. Who's done a Microsoft exam? Oh, look, this is great. Keep your hands up. Come on. Let's play the game. Keep it up if you've done more than 5. Good. More than 10? Who am I playing with now? There's about 5 of you. More than 15? Oh, dear. There's no one left but me. That's sad. Okay, so as an indicator of guess who hasn't got a life, I've done 55 exams. Now I'm feeling really self-conscious about that. The last one was the TFS 2010 exam. And of course, hopefully, I don't think they've been announced yet, but there'll be a couple of exams, or maybe a few of them, for TFS announced, if not this month, then next month. There's some ones on the way. So that'll probably be the next set of exams that'll get me into the testing center. I've been a Microsoft certified trainer since 96. So I've been out helping organisations adopt TFS, use TFS and ALM best practices since its release. I've written 6 TFS 2012 courses, so I travel around and I get to, I suppose, you know, to teach people how to use TFS correctly. And I've had the pleasure, this is my 4th Tech Ed this year, so I've had the pleasure of presenting talks in North America, in Europe, New Zealand last week, which was technically far from exciting. And then, of course, this will be the 4th one for the year. And wouldn't you know it, every single one of them wanted different sessions, just so you never really get that practice up. Anyway, that's a little bit about me. There's my Twitter handle up there, a neglected blog, which is the ALM Barometer. If I've got time to sit around and blog, that's a problem for TFS and the ALM community in large. I've got a website, the ALM training website, so that's just where all the courses are listed, and I also run the Queensland ALM users group. So that's me in a nutshell. So I guess what I want to find out is, you know, if you're not using TFS today, why not? I've probably got a couple of ideas as to what those common issues may have been, and let's see if we can dispel a few of those issues. So, you know, why aren't you using TFS today? Too hard? Too expensive? Just don't like it? That's perfectly good. Silence, you're all using it. Must be. All right. That's a minus D on the audience participation scale. You guys get to evaluate me. I should be able to do the same. You're a minus D. You can only go up from there. All right. Well, there's someone doing their evaluation. He offended us straight away. So some of the common answers to that question. We do hear that TFS is too expensive. Okay. Who's got an MSDN subscription? Okay, well, you guys already own TFS. Okay, did you realise that? With your MSDN subscription, you automatically get TFS. It's hard to install and difficult to administer. Who's installed TFS, say, 2005? It was fun, wasn't it? Sarcasm. So if you've ever installed that, you'd never want to do it again, I swear. It was a horrible, horrible experience. And people share when things go horribly wrong. We all like to do that. That's human nature. And installing TFS 2005 was always a horribly wrong experience. Rob Caron did really, really well with the installation guide. And if you followed that guide, well, you've raised the chance of success at least to 70%. The other 30%, it just was luck, I swear. Also, TFS is often seen as being just for big organisations. You know, we're a little micro ISV. We've got five guys, three guys doing a little bit of work. Or, hey, I'm an independent consultant. That's just me. Heck, I don't need TFS. That's a common idea, a thought. Why have all of that overhead? We haven't got time. We're paid to write great little, you know, applications quickly for our clients. And then finally, the idea that TFS is difficult to use, requires too much, you know, or adds too much friction to our processes. You know, we want to write just great little software, keep our customers happy, and putting TFS there just makes our job harder. Does anyone resonate with any of those issues? Agree? Okay, you've raised to a C. This is good. So let's see if we can dispel some of those myths during our session. Try it again. Lovely little animations. So TFS 2010, just for a moment, was included with all of those versions there. If you had an MSDN subscription, if you had any of those guys, you had your TFS license. If you didn't, you could purchase TFS. You could purchase TFS for $499. That'd give you five users to access it without client access licenses. And if you wanted to go above that limit of five, you'd then need to purchase client access licenses. I just remembered while I was talking about this, something should have been happening in the background. It's like one of those TSRs. Now I'm showing my age. One of those TSRs going, something should be happening, Anthony, while you're talking. That's right, we're supposed to be installing TFS. What you've got on the screen there is a stock standard. In this case, it's Windows 8. I have cheated a little bit. I've installed Visual Studio on there first. I've also installed the Express Edition of Visual Studio 2012 for web. That's all I've done. There is no IIS, there is no SQL on there, none of the prerequisites that generally were one of the hardest and most difficult things to get right. Often when you're looking through the forums, people are having trouble installing TFS. Some of the primary reasons were they didn't get the prerequisites right. By the time you got to the wizard for configuring TFS, if all your prerequisites were right, that TFS side was pretty easy. But of course, if the prerequisites were wrong, that's where the errors appeared and people thought TFS is broken. Well, it probably was broken, but it was the prerequisites were causing the pain. So I'm just going to go in here and I'm going to double-click tfsexpress.exe. About a 1 meg file there. It is a web installer if you want it to be. And I'll say install now. So it can pull the parts down off the internet. I didn't trust the internet. Legacy from TechEd New Zealand last week. So I'm just going to run off a little ISO. I think it was about a 400 meg download for the ISO with all the bits and pieces in it. Freely available. So that's going to go ahead and just get started. It's going to do a couple of pauses there. It's doing prerequisite checks for me. If we were connected to the internet right now, it would also be going out to make sure it's got the latest packages for each of the things it's about to install. Because I'm not brave enough to put that on the internet right now, it's going to come up with a little issue there. Soon forgotten about, of course, with a dialogue popped over the top. I'm just saying that before you configure TFS, you really should connect to the net and just do, you know, your latest updates. All right, so it's done a little bit of work there. And I'm going to say start the wizard. Wizards are always great for installing. It says we're going to install SQL Server. Yeah, no point sending stuff to Microsoft when there's no net. And I'll click next. It's going to do a few little checks there. That shouldn't take too long at all. I'll do the little tests and say, well, we're fairly confident we can get TFS installed here. It's done all of its checks. And I'm ready to say, go ahead and configure that. Now, we're not going to sit there and watch it. Probably the slowest thing there is going to be SQL Express. So it's just going to pause there while it does the SQL install. But it's doing all the hard work. It's doing all the heavy lifting. On a client operating system, Windows 8 in this case, but of course Windows 7 if you wish, it's going to go and install IIS. It'll configure the parts that it needs in IIS. It'll install SQL Express for us. It's going to go and set up the databases it needs, create the websites you're going to have a look at a little bit later for TFS to work, set up the services, and start our first team project collection. Now, that's a fairly straightforward wizard. So we'll come back to it. Ooh, guess who wasn't paying attention? I'm presuming the slides are on number one. Fantastic. Don't you love it when you guess right? Some pricing changes in 2010 that were announced in April. For those of you that aren't quite ready to jump over to 2012, some of the changes that they made. Team Explorer Everywhere is now a free download. So for heterogeneous development, if you're using Eclipse, if you're writing Java applications, then that particular client is now a free download. You can point that back to your TFS Express and get all of the rich capabilities of TFS Express, get the version control, the build, and so on. NoCal is required for anyone in your organisation that is going to access reports. If you want to go in there and have a look at reports, then you don't need that client access licence. The report white paper was never a fun read, never a fun thing to try and interpret either. Arabin was fantastic. One of the Microsoft guys was like, oh, license in question, here's his card. I swear I've handed out more of his business cards than mine. It's that sort of slippery shoulder attitude of get rid of the licensing questions. Also, there's no CAL required if you're integrating with System Center Operations Manager. So for improving that DevOps story, no requirement for a CAL, which is always good news. There was, I should have pointed it out just before it disappeared there, so ms.aka/TFS pricing will take you more information if that's in any way relevant or interesting to you. But what we should have seen there is the price barrier shouldn't really be considered much of a barrier anymore. All right, so Team Foundation Server Express 2012, a brand new thing for us. So free for up to 5 users. It's designed for small teams. It provides a lot of value. Source control, work item tracking, build automation, and a whole lot more. You know, it's really this small team idea. If you used SourceSafe, perhaps you're still on SourceSafe. SourceSafe was, a good, straightforward version control system. You could install little old SourceSafe on the desktop. And if you're a little independent consultant and you're out there writing a bit of code, then you're well able to, check in, check out, and life was reasonably good for you. Now there's better things we can poke fun at SourceSafe, but that's not my role today. So there's a lot of value, a lot more than just version control. It's supported by Visual Studio 2012 Express Edition, so this is fairly important. You can put in a free version of TFS. You can get full capabilities using free versions of Visual Studio Express, and those two things will talk well together. It's compatible with earlier versions of Visual Studio. So again, you might get a TFS server to get all the richness of TFS, but you can still use Visual Studio 2008, Visual Studio 2010, and access and take advantage of your TFS server. A couple of limitations, a couple of caveats there. It is designed to only support SQL Express. It's only supporting a single server configuration. You can't split the app tier and the data tier. You can't use a SQL box over here. You can't, you know, cluster that SQL box for high availability. That's not the role of TFS Express. There's no SharePoint integration, no reporting integration. Okay, so these are the things that you're missing from the full version of TFS. You can purchase additional client access licenses. So, you know, if you're outgrowing that license or that free 5 user, then you can purchase the 6th and the 7th and so on if you wish. A nice thing at the bottom there, you've got the ability to upgrade to a full version of TFS and keep all of your data, including all of your history, intact. So it means it's, you know, you can start small and, you know, the roadmap's there for growth when and, you know, when you need it. So these are some pretty compelling things about TFS Express. So let's say we've busted that first myth. You know, the idea of TFS being too expensive probably doesn't really hold up anymore. The next one there is hard to install and administer. So I'm just going to switch back to here. And what you've seen is that wizard has gone off and done the installation, done the configuration for me. I'll go ahead and say next. It tells me a couple of things there. I'll just click close. I'm also going to go and choose to install the build services. So I want to be able to check my code in. I want to have continuous integration builds. I want my projects to automatically build, run their unit tests and so on. So in the same way, I'm just going to say start wizard. And I'm really just going to go next, next. One agent sounds fine, next. For now, I'll use that service account. You'd never, ever want to do that with a full TFS server. And I'll click next and configure. So it's going to go off and that's going to install and configure all of the build infrastructure we need. Now remember, this is just a client operating system that was virtually completely clean when we started. I now have TFS installed and configured, ready to go. I now have build infrastructure ready. I have a build controller and I have a build agent. I'll go ahead and click next there. And close. Okay, I'll get out of there. So what you're looking at here is the TFS administration console. This is where I can go in there and I can find out various things. I can see, for example, what version I'm using. There's a good start. I can look at my app tier. I can scroll down. For any of you that have seen this in TFS 2010, it should be quite familiar to you. I can go down here and, for example, I can point this TFS instance to my mail gateway, my SMTP server, to enable the alerting capabilities that are available should I wish to do that. I'm just going to jump out of there for a moment. Close that. It's telling me that it really, really wants to do a reboot. And I'm just going to start up TFS Express 2012 for web. Again, that free version. I'm going to go in here and choose team, and I'm going to say I want to connect to a TFS server. And that was unexpected. We're good. So in saying that it was a very clean machine, I lied. I have pointed at other TFS servers, as you've seen. So I'm going to choose the default collection that was created for me. I'm going to go ahead and connect to the TFS server. Now this screen's, I think they could improve just a little bit. It's sort of a little block there. What do we do next? So in TFS, you've got to create a team project. That's that very first unit that we need before we can go forward. Create team project. The mandatory Contoso. And I'll choose the Scrum process template. Next, next, finish. Okay, so now it's off creating that team project for me. It should be a little bit quicker. It hasn't got to worry about the SharePoint integration, hasn't got to worry about SQL reports and so on. It's just having a little bit of a think. All right, so I've got a team project ready to go. just going to go back to the slides for a moment. So in terms of hard to install, hopefully we've worked through the hard to install myth by installing a full-blown TFS, full build infrastructure. The administer, I'm about to walk you through. We're going to go ahead and use the web UI. We're going to go and populate that our default team. We're going to put some users in there. And that's going to be probably the easiest experience you've seen for any version of TFS, made mostly easy by the fact that we haven't got SharePoint and reporting services to be overly concerned with. A full version of TFS. The full version of TFS uses SQL Server Standard Edition or Enterprise Edition. There is some reasonably complex integration that goes on, particularly with the other products that I've spoken about. Probably more well aimed for a portfolio of projects and can scale to incredibly large teams. Grant, when's your talk on Microsoft's experience taking TFS to the cloud?
It was this morning.
Excellent. Hopefully you all went to Grant's talk, and Grant would have told you some very big numbers in terms of usage statistics for how big the teams are on the DevDiff server and some of the Microsoft servers there. So certainly some very big numbers. Now, if we can compare or contrast this back to the Express Edition can install. I don't know why, Grant. I thought it was tomorrow morning. Please don't take that personally. If we have a look at the Basic or the Express Edition, you can install it on a laptop. That's exactly what I'm doing up here. It uses SQL Express, a fairly simple source control management solution, better for smaller projects, and certainly with that limitation, we're looking more for small teams. All right. Okay, so in terms of getting started with TFS, let's switch back over here. And I'm going to go ahead and select web access. So, unexpected. That's a bad sign. That's a terrible sign. Through that before. Okay. Does it always do that? Much appreciated. I'll pay you back by getting you to do some demos for me in a minute. That's great. All right, so I've gone in there and I'm having a look at the web access. All right. So first thing we want to do is probably go and add some members. I'll go ahead and say add. I'll start by, and I don't know that I've got a lot of accounts on here. Okay, let's add a couple of user accounts there and close out of that. I could just have easily have added AD groups, but remember, you know, with the limitation and the size of the teams that we would normally be, you know, looking at TFS Express with, that's probably not as relevant. Remember our five limitations, so already we're almost there. I can choose to go in there. Okay, so I've added my users. If you haven't seen it already, we can go up here and we can change the profile picture. All a lot easier than we've had to do before. Change that picture. I have no idea if there's anything on here. And users, no, I'm going to call that a no. So we can change the profile picture there. We can go and specify our display name. We've got that flexibility. I can go and specify the email address. So when I set up alerts, when things occur within TFS, it can automatically send those email alerts back out to me quickly and easily. That does require that email was configured and set up in the TFS central administration. Okay, I'll jump back out of there. Going to switch across to the administration site. Okay, so what you're looking at here is my default team that was created for Contoso. I can go in and have a look at, you know, my areas. I can set up some areas if I want to. I can go into my security, and I'm not going to go into too much depth or detail, but all of the security options are now set easily through the web UI, a huge improvement over what it was before. I can go in and have a look at my alerts. Now, again, it's telling me that the mail settings aren't configured, and that's really just a case of going in and telling it where the SMTP server is. If that was done, I can go and specify from a wide variety of alerts, but might allow me to see a few of them. So tell me when my build's complete, tell me when a file is checked into a particular folder. So plenty of alerts there. Again, a huge improvement for any of you that may have seen the alerts that was there without the power tools in all previous versions. I think there were only 5. So that was quite somewhat limited. So our alerts are certainly a heck of a lot better. So we're going to dive out of there. Yeah, we'll just close the current one. So I guess all I wanted to show you there is, you know, we didn't want to deep dive into any of the administration, but the administration, setting up security, setting up, you know, team membership, what people can do, is now just administered through those web UIs. Okay, so hopefully a lot easier than we've seen before. Okay, let me see how we're going with our slides. So let's say we've busted, hard to install and administer. I guess we got his animation wrong. And there was also, you know, just for big organizations, hopefully I've already convinced you that, you know, the TFS Express version with that kind of setup, with that configuration, is certainly something that small teams could reliably expect to use. So getting started with version control. What I'll do is, you've seen me go in with the Express Edition of Visual Studio and connect directly to TFS. What I want to do is, I'll probably cheat and go to the full-blown Visual Studio version, only because it gives us a little bit more versatility in the project types. I'm going to click on here and let's go ahead and connect. Thank you. So we're in Visual Studio 2012 now. I'll go and connect using that. Right, so I'm going to try an exercise in voice-activated computing. In terms of voice-activated computing, the way this is going to work is I'm going to say I want a new Visual Studio project created, and it's going to magically happen. It's going to happen through the aid of Grant, who is now still talking to me, even though I forgot his session was this morning. So guys, version control is probably one of the main reasons that you'll look at TFS Express. So I want to find out from you, you know, what do you want? What are some of the pain points? So let's start by creating any old project. I'll ask Grant to go in and create a simple project that we'll be able to throw maybe a unit test on and set up a build definition. So you can make that any language you like, any project type you like. As long as it's not VB, fantastic. Now he's scratching his head going, what have I done? Okay, so we've gone ahead and created that. Now, one of the really nice things, what version control do you guys use? Who uses JIT? Yeah, Perforce. Perforce up the back. None at all. Excellent. Thanks for being honest. That's really, really good. What else? Subversion, of course.
It's the worst one in the world, clear case.
Do we have like a prize for it?
Yeah. Like a consolation prize, yeah. So that's all good. One of the nice changes in 2012 is the idea of a local workspace. So the local workspace will be a lot more familiar to you. So how about we start by getting Grant to check that into source control? So again, this is done in the exact same way that we would have done it with any version of TFS. He's going to go in there and he's going to say, I want to go and add this to version control. And that initial comment there is a shameless plug for Grant's book. I guess I asked for that. One or both of them?
Both.
You were in both. You're an overachiever. So, two great books on TFS. professional ALM with TFS, and professional team foundation server 2012.
I wrote the two TFS.
The two TFS ones, okay. Oh, you should have just taken the credit. No one would know. One of them, I think, was shipping yesterday. Was that your one?
No, that was the ALM.
The ALM one. Okay. Sorry, I'm trying to sell your book. I really am. So hopefully Grant's gone and he's checked that in to version control for us.
Yep. See.
Excellent. Now, who'd like to point out that he really should have put that in a folder called main? Which is really, really difficult for me to say because I probably should have prompted him. So it's going to be the voice-activated part of this experience that's letting everything down. So one of the really good tips that you'd probably want to consider is when you go to check that source in, Grant said he wanted to add that solution to source control, and what it wants to do by default is check that straight into the root of that project file. Main, dev, trunk, they're your favourites. So always go and put it at least one folder down. That simple little change will make the whole branching and merging experience down the track enormously much better. Okay? We won't worry about going and, you know, fixing that. That's not such a big deal for us. So another really nice feature in 2012 is this idea of local workspaces. So have we checked that in? We've got our pending changes done?
Yep.
Awesome. So let's go ahead and open that in Windows Explorer. Okay, so we've got our source control there. We're going to open it in Windows Explorer. And one of the features that's available to us now with local workspaces, and local workspaces for small teams is fantastic. If we were to go and make a change, is there any file there we can make a change to, Grant? We'll just make a little change in Notepad. it's the demo guy. So I've made a little change. We're going to go ahead and click save there. And let's just pop back into our pending changes window. And inside pending changes, what you should see is that has automatically been detected. You know that read-only bit, the horrible nasty thing we've had in previous versions? That's all gone. So it's picked up automatically the change to that file. It's automatically checked that file out for us, which is a big improvement over what we've had. Let's, while we're there, go back into Windows Explorer. And I'll ask Grant just to go ahead and add a new file via Windows Explorer. Let's just create dave.txt. We create dave.txt. And on the right-hand side in Team Explorer, what you should see down the bottom there, in detected changes, you should see one. Now, just because we've put that file into the mapped drive location, it won't automatically add it to version control for us. We don't really want it to do that. What we do want it to do is to detect the change and give us a choice. So let's have a look at our... before we promote it, let's right-click on dave.txt, right where you were, Grant. So you've got some choices there. You can choose to ignore it in multiple different ways. I can say ignore all .txt files. Ignore dave.txt or ignore it by folder. You've got quite a lot of choice there. Now, if we want to create a config file locally just for our own debugging and our own work, we can do that without checking it in. And we can say, look, just ignore it. I just want to keep this file on my machine. You've got a lot of control over it. In this particular example, though, let's, for the heck of it, go ahead and promote it. And we'll send that up to the project and into TFS.
Check it in.
Yeah, let's check it in. Okay, so the local workspaces are a big improvement in the whole developer experience. These were all these little niggly paper cuts, I'll call them. When people were having a look at earlier versions of, of TFS, some of those little challenges, some of the paper cuts we didn't like, were paper cuts like the read-only bit. We'd go and pull some source down to our local machine. On our local machine, we'd try and do anything, and those files were all marked as read-only. So read-only bit completely gone. To be clear, if you are working in a larger team, with larger projects, then it's certainly something that you'd want to consider and probably switch back to server-based workspaces, which is what the default is for all previous versions. And you can switch between them. That's a reasonably trivial exercise. Do you have a favourite in the version control area? Do you feel... Sorry?
A favourite what?
A favourite feature? Do you feel like doing some branching? The feature that I built. That sounds like something we should have a look at. What are you going to show us, Grant?
Private public workspaces.
Fantastic. I should have got you a mic. My bad. So tell us about private and public workspaces.
So a public workspace lets anybody use the same sort of workspace on your machine, but they can check in under your name. So it's useful to say a developer has got a BizTalk environment set up, so lots of dependencies, but he goes away for a week. He wants somebody else to come along and use his workspace with all his code and dependencies. He can actually use that and check in under his name. So quite useful.
Excellent. Okay, should we do a branching exercise and show branch visualization?
Sure.
So even though this is the free version of TFS, you know, it's something that we can just get started on with a very small team, it is a fully feature-rich version control product. So what we're going to have a look at is we're going to do, let's create two branches.
Do you want me to create a main?
Yeah, create a main. Do you feel like it?
Yeah, I'll do it.
Okay. So Grant's going to go ahead and create a folder for us. We're going to convert that into a branch object, which is going to appear to be just a different icon. We're going to create a folder. We might go and call that releases QA. We're going to then branch again and call it, say, releases prod. We're going to go ahead and then visualize those changes. So that's a typical feature that you're going to want to use. You know, even though you're in a small team, branching can still be very useful. Yep, that sounds good. Yep. So what we're doing here is, you know, while branching is probably considered or thought of mostly in very large teams for isolation, branching can also still be used very effectively in small teams where we're using a promotion branch model. So we're going in and saying, well, look, you know, I might be a part of a very small team, but I want to branch this out so I know what version the customer has. Maybe it's a common code base that I use across multiple customers. So using branching there could be very, very helpful to allow us to, you know, keep track of little customizations that might be unique for a customer. So we've got a couple of branches created. Dev's fine. We can visualize a single branch, but it just shows two blocks and an arrow or a line. Actually, when I say it that way, it's quite embarrassing because now I'm arguing over having two blocks and two lines. But that's all right. Yes. All right, fantastic. So we're able to do our branching there. We can also track changes to find out exactly what's going on across each of those different branches. We haven't got enough source, and we're not going to write a lot of code unnecessarily just to demonstrate that feature. But branching is fully supported in there. Let's have a look at some of the comparison tools, so view history. So can we have a look at maybe one of the files you've created? Let's go ahead and make some more changes to it, check it in, and then let's go and have a look at the history of that file. It is so much easier to be able to just talk to an audience and just have stuff going on in the background, although it does scare me to turn my back on him.
You defend me.
I did. So I'm making a couple of changes there. We'll go and check a couple of those things in, and then directly from within there, we should be able to say right-click and view history. And what you'll see, we've got a couple of versions of it. We can go and find an older version, right-click, and do a compare. That compare experience The diffing experience is certainly a big. It's improved a lot in 2012. It's improved with pretty much every version. So earlier versions were probably plagued with a couple of false positives. They'd say there were changes where there weren't. There was just more of those paper cuts that, as we look at adopting TFS, these things are just, just sting us enough to annoy us. They've made some big improvements there. So the whole merge experience and the changes has improved quite a lot. If I remember correctly, the little slider on the right-hand side, that was a power tool in previous versions, and that's now available directly out of the box, unchanged. Okay. Any questions about the version control side of things? Any features you were hoping to see there that you're curious to know about? Does the compare come with a base compare as well?
So basically, you have a main step, which is base, mm-hmm. you branch out to. So when you compare your versions of your file, it's supposed to be compared with those two against base as well.
So it can do a comparison between two files, but I don't. Are you asking, can it do like a tertiary compare?
Yes, basically, three way of compare.
Not that I'm aware of. Can it?
Go three way
match. It does? I stand corrected very happily. Awesome. Was there another question?
Rollback. Is it easier to do a rollback now?
Is it easier to do the rollback? The rollback is now built in the UI.
I don't have to use a PowerShell command or anything like that.
You don't have to use a PowerShell command. You don't have to use the TF rollback command either. I'm in two minds of whether I like that.
One.
Rollback is one of those interesting things. In my experience, what I've found is that people that have used rollback, or knowing that you can just quickly and easily go rollback, people tend to want to overuse it. They sort of check something in just to see what happens, knowing that they can roll it back out again. I don't know. I just think that if rollback was just too easy, people would tend to use it without due consideration. I mean, if I make some changes and check it in, someone happens to do a get latest, picks those things up, and then I was able to potentially go back and try and change history, that could cause a problem. If you know how rollback works, though, rollback is a forward-moving activity. It creates a new set of pending changes that are the direct opposite of what you're trying to do. I actually haven't played with rollback in the UI. That's exciting.
Just to wake people up.
It's working. It's getting my attention anyway. I'm just going to start talking from the middle of the room. and Grant's doing rollback right behind us.
Yeah. I mean, here you select a change set that you want to particularly rollback. So there's an edit where I added a bunch of lines. You go, okay. Hit rollback. It then kind of pins the opposite of what we're doing. So the change set, I can check that in. So we now go look at that. There's nothing in there. Or if you come back here, I can actually rollback the rollback, which kind of gets a little bit.
Don't go rollback the rollback. That just scares me. So in essence, the rollback experience is there, and it is a heck of a lot easier. It doesn't require command line tools. Well, the command line's still there if you want to use it, but kind of why would you? There was another question just over here, I thought. Yes, sir?
Can you do branch merging?
Explain exactly what you mean by that.
You say you got multiple branches?
Yes.
And then you modify single files in there?
Yes.
Can you merge them into one?
If I understand the question, yes, you can, absolutely. So can you merge single files between branches?
Yep.
Absolutely. Single files. Is there something there I'm missing?
I think you can't merge them. If you branched, I don't think you can go from the branch back to the main, though. So if you were in main and you branched mm-hmm. off to dev,
yes,
and then you go into the dev and you made some changes to there,
mm-hmm.
I don't think you can merge that back into main because it was a branch off.
So to me, that sounds like, can you do forward and reverse integration merges?
I don't do it that way, but I just know that one time somebody tried to do it, and when you try to merge it back in, it doesn't mm-hmm. come with the option to merge back into main. You can go from main to dev or main to the branches that you came up with main. This is in 2008 that I'm working with. So
you've got to be able to go back to a parent and back down. You can't simply merge between two childs down here.
You can try it here. I mean, 2008.
I'm pretty sure that hasn't changed. They've got to be basically parented to the same point before you can do a merge. Is there anything that I'm missing, Grant?
You can now do baseless merge.
Baseless merge in the UI?
Yep.
Okay. So if that's the nature of the question, so baseless merge was always something you'd always want to try and avoid if at all possible. Baseless merge says, look, we want to ignore the parental history. We want to basically say, here's some a group of files, here's another group of files, and I want to go ahead and just do a merge from A to B. So baseless merge is now something that is supported through the UI. It is something that you could only do in the command line in 2010 and previous versions. Well, baseless merge should theoretically be able to go in any direction you like, because that's the whole point. It's baseless. It should be able to just look at two discontiguous blocks of files. Yeah?
It's doing a merge, but it's kind of working out, you know, what's common between them, and that kind of establishes the base. And so now that we've done that merge and checked it in, we can now merge between those all the time because we've now got a base between them.
I think there are a couple of questions here, then I'll come back to the middle. I think some hands were up. Yes, sir.
Where do you specify the style of checking out and checking in? So what I mean is there are two styles, mm-hmm. check out, edit, check in.
Yes.
Or edit and check in. So where do you specify this?
So where do you specify the checkout workflow?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that something where we're talking about the project properties in settings? If I understand the question correctly. I hope your question isn't can this be a truly distributed version control system?
Yeah.
Because if that's the question, you're going to get a bad answer.
Yeah, but there are like classic style when you first check out, mm-hmm. and if you check it out, another person can't.
So you're talking about your locking. So see up here where it's got enable multiple checkout?
Yeah.
Is that? Yeah. So by default, this feature is going to be turned on. You can change that in your process template. You can change it on a per project level. So do you want to enable shared checkout by default? It is only a default. Remember, every time you do a checkout, you've got the ability to go in and say, look, I want to do a checkout. Here are the lock operations. So do I want to lock it so other people can't check it out? Do I want to lock it so that they can check out but not check in? Do I want to leave any existing locks in place or have full shared experience? So you can specify that every time you check out if you wish. So all we're talking about just up here is what's the default going to be? Okay. Yes, sir.
You showed us there were some improvements to the div tools. What about merge tools? Can they now support XML files a bit better?
Ooh, that is a question I have no idea about. Has the merge operation improved? Does it better support XML files?
Yeah, like your
files?
Project files and your solution files tend to, because they don't understand the internal structure of those as being XML.
Mm-hmm. That one I have not seen anything about.
It's just a text version.
Yeah. If there'd been some big changes there, I'm thinking I probably would have heard something about it. The fact I didn't probably led us to the nothing really new and exciting there. One more over here and I'll go back to the middle. Yes, sir.
Git has a really useful feature to be able to do a partial push-up to a group of users within the source repository before you actually check it back into the central source.
Interesting.
Okay,
so the question was, so Git has an ability to do a partial push of some files up to a limited group of people or a select group of people?
So you're working on APIs or whatever, that's a subset of the overall solution.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually check your changes back into a subgroup of people that are working on the APIs that they can sort out and finalize the changes before it gets promoted back to the root of the source?
So I guess the closest thing we'd have for that would kind of be shelving. Yeah. So, I mean, was the purpose there, and there could be two answers to it, was the purpose in doing that perhaps to let them do a code review, to have a look at what was going on there perhaps?
Well, and also to do like a remote combined development so that you're not infecting your changes across the whole development branch for all of your developers, but for select groups that they can review and make sure that their code changes will interoperate with your code changes.
So I guess the way I'd probably handle that would be through the use of shelving. So with shelving, I've got my pending changes here. Instead of going and checking that back in, and as your terminology was, infecting other people with my pending changes, I can choose simply to go and shelve it. And what that will do is it'll take my pending changes, it'll push those back up to the TFS server for us. Others can then selectively choose to get that shelf set down. They can pull that shelf set down. They can socialize those changes with what they're going on with. We can do private or buddy builds. So I can say, look, take the shelf set here, go and grab this build definition, and go and do that as a private build up on the server for me, because I just want to see if these pending changes are going to break the build. So we've got certainly some capabilities to achieve the same outcome.
Yeah?
Okay. Yes, sir. So offline check-in is a no. Okay, so there is an offline mode which is different. So offline is if we were to go and stop the TFS service, you know, we could go and do things on the server, but not what you're talking. The simple answer there is just no. Okay. Yes, sir. What sort of branch? Something which contains a branch.
Like, for example, if you branched a shared library into your app, and then you want to branch the entire app. I know in 2010 it's locked you doing that. I'm just wondering.
I don't think they would have changed that at all. And that's, I don't know if that's necessarily a technical thing. I think that's probably trying to avoid teams doing it on purpose. Is it? That was a kind enough way of saying it. Yeah. Joe, you had a question?
Mm-hmm. If I've got two developers working on the same solution,
yes,
and you don't know which change is going to go to my first, they would create two branches.
Okay, so the question is, so Jo said there are, she's got two developers working on some code in the same solution. And the rest of us?
I'd have them create two branches, is that right, off my main? And then how do I manage that, bringing it all back together? If they change the same piece of code, the same line of code, how does TFS manage that potential conflict?
Okay, so I probably wouldn't look at that as a branching style question. So, I mean, what you're talking about is you've just got two developers working on the same code. As a rule of thumb, the branching stuff in TFS is actually very good. But if you can avoid branching, life is easier. So if we can do no branching at all, you'll never have, you know, those kinds of challenges and issues, which are usually human in nature. In your particular example, that's, I think, some of the core functionality in TFS. You know, developer A checks some code out, makes some changes, checks it in. Developer B is doing the same kinds of things. I certainly wouldn't branch for individual developers like that.
But what if developer B got their code?
Yes.
At the same time developer A did.
So A and B both get the same code?
And then A's done his changes and he's checked it in.
Yes.
And B's still doing their changes. They want to go check it in.
Yes.
What happens because they've actually got a different code base.
Absolutely. So it's a standard conflict there. So that's what, you know, version control systems are all about. So when the second one attempts to check in, it's going to say, you know, there's been some conflicts here. It'll look for those. We'll get a conflict resolution dialogue appear. That's one of the really exciting parts of these ad hoc Q&A style sessions. He's got the hard job, I've got to say. So it's a standard conflict resolution that you're going to talk about. The diffing experience is certainly better than it was before. That was what I was alluding to before when I was saying you'd often get false positives and things, which weren't fantastic. They'd say there was a conflict where there, you know, evidently was not. Even the visual representation of those conflicts has been significantly improved. So instead of just saying, you know, highlight this line and this line, there's a conflict, it puts a very light shade behind the line where the conflicts exist, and then puts, you know, little darker regions behind the characters or the keywords that are different to draw your eye to exactly where on the line the conflict exists. Oops. You just want to sing out if you get that one ready?
Yeah.
Almost there. Should I take a question or should I wait?
What's the web access like?
What's the web access like? Fantastic. I don't really need to elaborate on that, surely. No? So, sorry, what's the web access like? Significantly improved. Have you used Team Web Access in 2008 or 2010?
Yeah.
So it was okay. It wasn't
slightly crummy.
That's kind, but true. The new experience, it's an enormously better experience. So it's completely redeveloped from the ground up. You know, it's all...
Part of Express.
Yes, it is part of Express. Okay, so in fact, I did go in there. So when I created Contoso, very briefly, when I went in there with Contoso, I went in and I added some members there. I went into the admin experience. I was very, very brief in there, but it is a much greater experience. Little things like you open up a work item and you hit Control S in a web experience. What that should do normally in a web browser is bring up a dialog box to save the page, the web page. In Web Access, it knows that you Control S will simply save the open work item. You know, it is really well constructed Web Access, and it works across all popular browsers as well, not limited to just, you know, certain ones. And customization is the entire next talk I'm doing in this room coming up. A little bit more depth than this particular talk. I'll just check Grant. Okay.
I saw my demo.
You saw the demo? While I was talking? Fantastic. Then I'll assume that everyone saw that demo. Who was next? I think you were next.
Just with default security on when you create a new project.
Okay, so default security on a new project, yes?
Is that easy to set up so that if you don't have a complex team structure, you can automatically have certain groups defaulted at create stage instead of having to go in and select the groups to add?
So it could be a two-part question. So in terms of the default security, again, you saw me go in there and just add my users.
Yeah.
Are you talking about a small team with TFS Express?
TFS in general.
So TFS Express was very easy, and I've already done it. I went in there and said members, add, and that was straightforward. The full-blown TFS, when you start then introducing integration with SharePoint and integration with reporting services, that permission structure hasn't changed. Mm-hmm.
New team project.
Yep.
I want to. All our guys have already got access to SharePoint and to reporting, all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We just want to have them automatically added in as contributors to that project, to that team project. Is that?
None of that's changed. No. In 2010, I mean, you've still got to create those groups in AD. You've still got to use the TFS administration tool to put those groups into each of the various products. All completely the same. Okay. And again, I wish that was a different story. Okay. So 15 minutes to go. I should have looked at my time. 3:30, 4:30, 4:15. Good. I still want Grant to create us a build definition and show you an automated build, so I don't want to run him out of time. Yes, sir?
Can you cherry pick commits from one branch to another?
Can I change... Can I cherry pick changes? Yes, absolutely. So that remains the same as it was in 2010. So I can go in there and I can, you know, being careful, it shouldn't be your default model, but you can cherry pick change sets between branches when you're merging them back together again. I'll take two more and then I probably want to get in and move on to some of the automated build with you.
Just wondering, with the multi-checkout, is there any option to do by like file type? Like, because it's impossible to merge an EDMX or something, but at the same time, it'd be nice to have the multi-checkout.
Absolutely, you can. So basically the way that it goes, and I'm trying to remember exactly where that setting is, source control, thank you, Grant. So that's exactly what you see there. So by file extension, you can go in there and you can tell it whether or not to enable those things. It's exactly what you're talking about. If it's a text or XML-based file, then, of course, shared checkout's a dream. If it is other file types, then, of course, you don't want that behavior. So it is by file type. That's been there for certainly a few versions, if not all of them. True story. And I think there was the last hand was here. Will I go through the code review process? Not in this talk. And not in the next one. The next one's customization. You didn't see the code review workflow in... Adam didn't show that to you on Wednesday morning?
Different session.
You were in a different session, yeah. So you can't get code review workflow in the Express version of Visual Studio. Can we do it with this one? Okay, so Grant's going to be very kind and show you that demonstration. Remember, it's not in Express.
This is Express.
We're using TFS Express, but the client is Visual Studio Ultimate here. Okay, so at the very beginning I showed you the Express version, but then I said we were going to continue the demo using the full version just for more flexibility.
So it's not the TFS feature,
then? It's a Visual Studio client. But it's got to be backed with TFS. So TFS has code review work item types. That's actually a good question. Do those exist in Express? I haven't looked. We can find out. Because you've got to have that code review request work item type and the code review response work item type. So they've got to exist within TFS, but they've also got to be supported by the client version of Visual Studio that you're using, which the Express version will definitely not. Okay, so we're doing our code review workflow up there. We've gone out and we've requested a code review. We've got two requests, or we've asked two people. Okay, you see where he's added reviewers, so he's added two code reviewers up there. You can either say, you know, any of the people can do that code review, or you can ask that all of them do the code review. They'll go ahead and do that code review for us. They'll create the code review response. And provide us feedback. And that feedback's been significantly improved. So they can go in there and they can mark up our source code. They can highlight keywords and say, look, you know, this is a, an inappropriate keyword. It's now been, what's the word I'm looking for? Deprecated. Thank you. Deprecated. So you can put those comments in line directly in the code. So the code review experience is certainly a big improvement. Done? Oh, one more question. There's always one more question. Okay.
Is there any limitations with the Express versions of the TFS with the test editor versions of the Visual Studio?
I knew I was going to regret taking that question. Good one. So the question is, are there any limitations for the testing tools with TFS Express? I do not have a clue. No. No idea. You've got us both stumped. I'll throw it out to the audience. Anyone heard about, you know, can you use Microsoft Test Manager against the Express version of TFS?
I think it can, but that's what I read. But I was not aware of any limitations.
I probably won't confirm or deny it. So if you want to go and find us after this, I've got another session straight after that, and then we've got our attendee party. So maybe if you come to the Visual Studio stand in the morning, I'll be very happy to get that answer for you. I'm just not 100% sure now. So, fantastic. Don't you love this multitasking? Much appreciated, good sir. Oh, it seems to work. And the licensing police haven't sort of abseiled down from the roof, so I think we're in luck. Maybe that's them out the back there making the noise. All right, so I want to finish off with a quick look at the automated build. It's another significant feature for a very small team. Again, if you're only just a couple of people, having that build is a very, very useful thing. So you saw me as part of the installation on Windows 8 at the start, go in there, and after we installed TFS, I asked it to go ahead and install the build infrastructure. It gave me a build controller, and it gave me a build agent automatically. So Grant's going to go ahead, and he's going to say that he wants to create a build of whatever application he thinks is going to build. And the wizard will be very similar to what you're hopefully used to today if you've touched TFS at all. So we're going to go in there and we're going to call it a CI build. And we're going to go through just a little wizard up here to create those builds. Do we want continuous integration? Our other choices there, we can have a rolling build, we can use gated check-in builds. So all of that sophistication is available to you from TFS Express. We'll stick with continuous integration and move on to the workspace. So what files do we need on the build agent to do the compilation? So instead of bringing down everything from the root of Contoso, which would bring down all of the branches, we can be a little bit more selective and Grant can choose an appropriate branch so that we're only bringing down just the code we need. Now you'll notice it's quite a big grid there. You can be very selective. I can say, you know, bring all manner of code down. Obviously, you want to try and bring down just what you need to get the builds going as fast as possible. Let's go across to our build defaults. And you'll see that it's identified our build controller. Ooh, and I don't have a network share set up, Grant. What I should have had there is a drop folder for him. So he's selected the default build controller. And then what it needs to do is when it does the compilation, when it gets the build outputs, it wants to copy those to a UNC path. Okay, so I guess behind the scenes, Grant's just created a folder for us and he's shared it. We're using the horrible system account or network service, whichever it was. So hopefully we catered for that. Okay, so there's our drop folder. We're going to go into our process and we've got the ability to go in and modify our build scripts. We're going to use the default template here, but we can go and customize these things as you can with the full version of TFS. There's lots of different choices there. We won't go through all of them now. Let's go to our retention policy. And just to make sure that we don't go and fill up the server, we can specify how many of these to keep. Do you want to keep just the last couple, the last five? You know, you can specify those things very easily. For a small team, a team that would be using TFS Express, it would be reasonable to have the build controller and agent on that machine. But again, you would never do that in an enterprise environment. You know, you never want a build agent on a TFS server for many, many reasons. For very small teams, I guess we'd break that rule and that would be considered acceptable. But don't take it away as a best practice. Okay, so Grant's gone ahead and saved that. And as a continuous integration build, we've got some choices. We can choose to manually trigger it, but CI is all about that automatic triggering process. So we're going to go in there, open up a random source control file. He's going to make a very simple and easy change to it. He's then going to go and check that in, and then we'll jump across to our build, and what you should see is the build automatically triggering. Now, we didn't create any unit tests in here unless he was very busy behind my back. But that build will then go and occur. The build agent will get the source out for us. It'll do the compile for us. If we were linking with work items and it'd do all of magic behind the scenes, it could run the unit tests for us. And it's going to get the build outputs when it's done. And it's going to place those build outputs into the drop folder. Now, the good news about continuous integration is if you're going to fail, you can fail early. And it gives you that instant and very, very quick feedback. Remember that service account nasty? I kind of set him up for that because in the real world, we would never use a built-in account for build. I don't care about the other ones so much, but if anything's going to hurt you, using your built-in account for the build services is the one. You know, the installation guide talks about an account TFS build. That's the one you want to create. Create that as an explicit account and run all of your build infrastructure under that account. Makes troubleshooting enormously much easier. Okay, and saves a lot of grey hairs. So hopefully we've got another build fired off there. And again, the success or the failure of the build isn't the significant thing. It's the fact that with the free version of TFS, we're able to go in there, set up that build infrastructure incredibly quickly and easily. We're able to set up things like continuous integration and get these builds happening automatically. We can then fully customize those things. It's based on Windows workflow. I can go into Windows workflow and create a custom activity. As part of that build workflow, I can then create a custom activity that packages it up, FTPs it off to a web server, makes a web deploy call, uses web deploy to publish it to a live QA web server for our testers to get started on. lots of opportunities there to take it further. I'm going to let him off the hook in a minute. Good. It's trivial. What we wanted to see there was simply that build process. So just before I wrap up, guys, a round of applause for my demo bunny. Good job. Thank you. Appreciate it. Who had no idea he was going to do that role until he walked in. But that's certainly worked out very well for us, to be able to sort of explain and talk those things through, get through a lot more questions along the way. So I very much appreciate Grant's assistance there. All right, so that brings us nearly to the end. Let's switch back over here. That's where I realise I've skipped a whole bunch of slides, but they're slides. Lots of improvements in the version control system there. You saw a few of them. Some of them are a little less exciting, unless perhaps you're doing some work with Linux and so forth, where the execute bit support's really exciting. For the rest of us, not nearly as interesting. In terms of moving on to TFS Express from earlier or previous versions, we can go in there. And I guess for small teams that would consider this, it's generally unlikely you're going to want to bring your source across with the full history of your source control. If I had to average out, let's say 80-20, the first time I say, when we migrate all of your code across to TFS, do you want the tip or do you want all of the history? 80% of people go, we want the history. By the time we get to the stage of doing the migration, it's gone the other way. People realize that it is just a really good opportunity to clean up shop. I've been in environments where they've got me to go and migrate them from SourceSafe, and it's like, well, I need to access your SourceSafe, and they've sort of, we'd rather you didn't. It's a bit embarrassing. That was done by people that were here before me. You get that a lot. So it's really just a really good chance to restructure your folders. And again, in an audience of, say, 100 people, who's looked at history in the last 2 weeks, you might get 10% on average. For those people that looked at history, who went back further than 2 weeks? And now you're down to just a couple of hands. Usually, I'm generalising there most certainly. But the point of the exercise is that once you've done the migration, after 2 weeks, the majority of people have the history they want moving forward. And we're not talking about deleting everything out of SourceSafe or the previous version control product. We're simply talking about switching it across to read-only and then moving forward with TFS. So tip migrations generally tend to end up being the most popular type. There's just a very quick slide walkthrough there. I want to show you a new feature in 2010. Wow, those animations are just really annoying. The screenshot's really what I want to care about there. All right. For anyone that's done a migration from Visual SourceSafe, is anyone still using SourceSafe? Yeah? Okay. It's probably a really great time to move. In fact, there's never been a better time to move. What I mean by that is previous versions of the migrations have required that you dealt with command line tools, you've had to go and set up a lot of infrastructure to do it, you've created XML files, you've gone and done a trial migration, you've come up with 10,000 errors, and you've gone, oh my God. Then you've realised that it's probably only 20 errors happening many, many, many times. But it's a very iterative, very time-consuming process and just not a heck of a lot of fun. In the release, the RTM version of 2012, you can go into the admin console and there's something in there called the VSS Upgrade Wizard, which basically makes that whole experience now a simple experience of going through a wizard. We specify the SourceSafe repository, a password if we need to. We tell it what projects we want. We tell it where we want to go and put those projects in TFS. It then says, do you want to do full history or do you want to just do the tip? That's entirely up to you. You've got to give it an instance of SQL Express. It needs a temporary store as it moves the files across. It goes ahead and does all that hard work for us. And now all of your code is out of SourceSafe. Well, sorry, it's not out. It's still there. It's a copy. But now you've got all of that migrated across into TFS Express, a much better experience. Okay. Much better experience. There was an interesting thing there, too, but I just skipped past that very last point. It works with both an on-premise version of TFS and TFS Preview. So if you're using SourceSafe today on site, you can sign up for a free TFS preview account, and you can use this tool to push your source from SourceSafe straight up into the TFS preview repository in the cloud. That's pretty interesting. And I'm just going to jump ahead there because we've already done the build automation. Something you don't get. So some of the really nice, compelling, you know, features that are going to make organizations want to move from TFS 2010 to 2012 is the agile planning tools, things like the task board, going in there and working with the product backlog in a really nice web-based GUI, the drag and drop reprioritization, all the things I'm talking about in the very next session here. Those things are not available with the TFS Express version. Okay, and you know, I guess you know, you've got to understand that a little bit. So all those wonderful pieces of goodness, not there in the Express version. Okay, so there's a little slide that just talks about the differences between Express, the full-blown server version, and the TFS in the cloud version, but I'm well out of time now. Hopefully then, in terms of difficult to use, hopefully we've busted that final myth. We found that the TFS Express, you know, those you know, main reasons why people would generally not consider TFS, many of them maybe are not as valid as once they were. Price doesn't stick out for us anymore. Ease of installation and administration, a very straightforward process. Not something just for big organisations. And in terms of feature and ease of use for developers, that's a fairly good story as well. So guys, I hope you've appreciated the talk, the Q&A we did along the way, which is always good. Keep in touch, there's some details there. The slides, of course, will be downloadable for you. If not now, then I think usually about 24 hours after the presentation. If you've got any questions, feel free to keep in touch. Some related content, that's right. I think about the only TFS-related talk to go tomorrow is first thing tomorrow morning. I think Adam's up at 8:15 doing a modern architecture review with the code review tools. So if you want to really see some of the code review stuff, there's a whole session. It's not a whole session on just code review, but it certainly will be covered tomorrow. Don't forget to fill in your evals. It's always really great to get some feedback and some good prizes for you as well, if you go ahead and do that. And keep an eye out for some of the resources on Channel 9. Thanks a lot for your time, and I hope you've enjoyed TFS Express.